The views and opinions expressed in Cold and Missing are exclusively those of the hosts. All parties mentioned are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Cold and Missing also contains adult themes and languages. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm your host, Allie McLaughlin-Sulkowski.
And I'm your co-host, Eli Sulkowski.
And this is Cold and Missing, where we cover cold cases
and missing person cases.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cold and Missing. I'm Allie.
And I'm Eli. Welcome back, everyone.
Just wanted to take a quick minute here at the top. At the time of recording, we're quickly approaching Thanksgiving, so we are going to take a break next week and take the week of Thanksgiving off. We have some family coming into town, so we'll be doing lots. So we're going to take next week off. So I hope you enjoy time with your friends and family if you're celebrating here in the United States, or even abroad if you're celebrating with a good family meal next Thursday.
I just have to add that that is the first scheduled break Allie has put into place for this podcast. And we are going on our third year of doing this podcast. So I'm just kind of in shock because I didn't know that she was going to say that in opening this episode. But with that, let's get into episode 110.
Let's do it. So just as a bit of a content warning at the top, this case does involve mentions of sexual assault. Today, we are talking about the murders of Bertha Scott and Nancy Lagerquist, which took place in 1990 in Missoula, Montana. But first, a little bit about Bertha and Nancy. Bertha Scott was 85 years old in 1990. She was born March 19, 1904, and was raised in Allentown, Pennsylvania. She had married Charles Scott in 1924, but he passed away in 1963. She loved gardening, traveling, flowers, houseplants, needlepoint, and painting. She moved to Missoula, Montana in 1988 to be closer to her daughter. She lived at the Riverside Healthcare Center, and she suffered from Alzheimer's. Nancy Zelma Lagerquist was 87 years old in 1990. She was born in Hamilton, Montana on December 13, 1902. She graduated from high school and she went on to work as an executive secretary. Nancy had lived most of her life in Missoula. She had never married and had moved into Riverside 2 years earlier in December of 1988. She didn't have any close family. She lived in a private room, and she could not walk and needed to be pushed in a wheelchair to get around. And now, a timeline of events. On May 2nd, 1990, Bertha is found dead in her room. At first, her death appears to be of natural causes, and it's reported as such. There was some discoloration around her neck, but her death certificate is signed by a medical doctor attesting to natural causes. A Riverside administrator, Neil Ostile, says, quote, "Nothing seemed out of place in her room at all," end quote. Bertha was found still in her bed with her restraints in place. It appears that during the early 1990s, they would restrain Alzheimer's patients, and this is something that is not recommended to do today. However, in the Riverside Center, they did notice that a window was left open in the physical therapy room, and this was unusual. On July 1st, 1990, it's been almost 2 months to the day since Bertha was found dead in her bed. There are five people working the night shift that evening of July 1st. Workers at the nursing home were doing routine checks of all of the residents. They do them every hour, and at the 3:30 a.m. check, all was normal at the facility. There were alarms on all the doors that led to the outside, and all of the alarms were functioning, but none of them would go off that night. At the 4:30 a.m. check, Nancy was missing from her room. Immediately, the staff began to sweep the facility. She could not move on her own, so someone must have picked her up to move her. The window screen in Nancy's room had been cut. At 4:41 a.m., the center calls the police to report Nancy missing. Police begin searching the nursing home grounds. They also call the fire department to bring a boat to help them search the Clark Fork River that flows behind the nursing home. Nancy's window faced the river. At around 6:30 a.m., police find Nancy's body in the river. Her body had gotten caught in some willows about 100 feet downstream. She was still in her sleeping clothes, but the diaper that she needed to wear was missing. Years later, Detective Bob Reed, who will work the case, says, quote, "It was fairly gruesome. It appeared to be ritualistic. It wasn't the usual sort of case. It depends on how Freudian you want to get, with the river and all, but certainly there were things that were done that weren't necessary to cause her death," end quote. Nancy's death was horrific. She had been sexually assaulted with an object, and during the course of the assault, the object pierced both her abdomen and chest. Police begin processing the scene. They're unable to find the murder weapon that was used in Nancy's assault. Also missing is her diaper. Police try to locate it, but are unable to find it. They think it was tossed in the river. They ask the public that if they find a discarded adult diaper to please call them. Police take the sheets from her room as evidence as well. Police begin to question the workers and residents of the nursing home. Other residents had talked about seeing a man lurking around the nursing home at night, but the staff had never seen him, and they weren't sure if he actually existed. Detective Bob Reed says, quote, "The problem is, the staff was dealing with folks who, because of their conditions, might not be the most reliable witnesses," end quote. However, one of the staff members did see a man in the parking lot around 4 a.m., just a half hour before they realized that Nancy was missing. On July 3rd, it's been 2 days since Nancy's murder, police do not have any strong suspects in Nancy's murder. They are interested in talking to a man seen in the parking lot of the Missoula Athletic Club, which in 1990 sat right next door to Riverside Care Facility. This man was seen around 4 a.m. I have a strong suspicion that this is the same man that workers said they saw the night of Nancy's murder, but police never officially say that there are two people. So there's either two people, a man was seen in their parking lot and then in the parking lot next door, or this was the same guy, the same instance. When they mention this man in the future, it's always that he was seen in the parking lot next door, not at Riverside's parking lot. The man was white, 30 to 40 years old, and weighed about 180 to 200 pounds. He has light brown hair, collar-length hair that was cut above the ears. He also had a mustache and brown-rimmed glasses. He was wearing a white and brown striped t-shirt. It was not tucked in, but the tail of the shirt was longer than the front of the shirt. He wore tan button-fly shorts and white top-type tennis shoes and white socks. Police stress that they just want to talk to this man and see if he saw or heard anything. The center's administrator, Neil Ostile, says, quote, "I think everybody thinks that this was an isolated thing. It's just bizarre. It's something so unexpected that I don't know how to interpret what happened. It's one of those things that happened that you never plan for. There's nothing that anybody could have done. We take every precaution that any nursing home in the United States would have," end quote. The next day, July 4th, police say that they have no suspects at this time, but they are looking into a few people. Police believe that Nancy was abducted between 3:30 and 4:30 a.m. and then murdered. Police are still looking for the man that was seen near the nursing home. Quote, "We're not saying he did it. We just want him to tell us what he knows," end quote. Police say that they are beginning to run forensic tests on evidence that they do have, but they stress that the evidence is not earth-shaking and that they still need more information to solve this case. On Friday, July 6th, it's been 5 days since Nancy's murder, and all of the leads that police have pursued over the last few days resulted in nothing. All the leads fizzled out. Nancy's body is ultimately cremated. According to her close friend, she didn't want any service. Instead, they do hold a prayer service in her honor. About a week later, on July 13th, police say that they do have several people of interest in Nancy's death, but not enough evidence to bring charges to any one of them. Captain Pete Lawrenson says, quote, "It's still very much a mystery. We're looking at several different people from different angles," end quote. They do suspect at least one employee, but he is ultimately eliminated. By August, police are desperate for a break in the case. They had previously asked nursing home staff if there were any other unusual deaths. That's when a nurse mentions that Bertha Scott had discoloration around her neck and they found a window open that should have been closed the day they found her dead. On August 16th, 6 weeks after Nancy's murder, Bertha's body is exhumed and taken to a state crime lab in Missoula for an autopsy to determine if her death was violent in nature. However, police are initially doubtful that Bertha's death is related. Quote, "What we are trying to do is establish that there was no foul play in the death of Bertha Scott," end quote. However, if they do determine that foul play is involved, the two deaths will be linked together. Bertha's body is taken straight to the crime lab for an autopsy. The autopsy shows that Bertha's death had been a murder, and they reclassify her death as a homicide. She had been sexually assaulted and strangled. The bruising under her neck showed signs of soft strangulation, meaning that there were no ligature marks. But police stopped short of saying exactly how they believe she was strangled. Captain Pete Lawrenson says, quote, "We think we know how it happened, but that's something only we know and he knows," end quote. Police are able to recover DNA from Bertha's body. They have it sent off for forensic testing. With the second murder confirmed, staff at the nursing home are on edge. Administrator Neil Ostile says, quote, "We are all just flabbergasted. I think we are feeling just like everybody else. What the hell is going on?" End quote. On Monday, August 20th, staff at Riverside call police in a panic. They found a window that looked tampered with. The week before, they had found a window with the screen removed. Captain Pete Lawrenson says, quote, "Everybody out there has access to the windows, so we don't know if someone there might have left one open or something. They're understandably concerned about anything that seems out of place there," end quote. On August 21st, 1990, a $5,000 reward is offered for any information leading to the arrest of Bertha and Nancy's murderer. On April 30th, 1991, so it's been almost a year since Bertha was murdered and about 9 months since Nancy was murdered, police have waited for months for the DNA test and comparison to the blood of suspects to come back. But nothing comes back conclusive. The only DNA profile that they are able to pull from the evidence was Bertha's. They were not able to isolate the killer's DNA. DNA testing was just not as sophisticated at this time. Police are baffled by this case and are begging anyone with information to come forward. Detective Bob Reed says, quote, "I think it's clear from looking at the entire situation here. We are dealing with someone who used a great deal of caution. That a human being was removed from a building full of people indicates the level of care that was taken. There is usually something in the life history of the victim that will lead you in a fairly obvious direction. In this case, there wasn't. That was a bad sign," end quote. However, police are still determined to solve this case. Again, Detective Bob Reed says, quote, "We had some initial suspicions, and some were significantly firmer than others. Some days I felt like I knew who did it. Most days I didn't. It's not like TV where the detectives knows who did it and they just have to prove it. In spite of how difficult it's been, I don't think that difficulty has softened anyone's resolve to stick with the case and work it as hard as we can. I don't have any practice giving up on a case, so I won't," end quote. However, that is the last real update that we have on Bertha Scott and Nancy Lagerquist's murder. So if you know anything about the murder of Bertha Scott and Nancy Lagerquist in 1990, please call the Missoula County Sheriff's Office at 406-258-3302. So that is the cold case of Bertha Scott and Nancy Lagerquist.
At the top, I think mostly what I want to say first or just talk about is I am at least happy to know that both Bertha and Nancy lived long, fulfilled lives before the ending of their lives, the kind of unimaginable endings. I also think is worth mentioning at the top, this one I think will be difficult for me to talk about, as I'm sure it was difficult for a lot of you to listen to. This is truly one of the most like horrifying cases I've ever listened to or engaged in with true crime, and I'm just so glad to know these women's names, and I do have things to say, but just speaking on the cases as a whole, I'm at a loss for words.
Yeah, these cases were really difficult for me to research, and usually I'm somebody who can kind of put the emotion aside and just like dig into the facts and try to get the timeline, you know, just stay really clinical with it all. But this one really got to me. I had to take, you know, some breaks while researching and just kind of like let my mind be somewhere else, because it's horrific what happened to these women. And it's really unfair that they, you know, they were able to live such beautiful and wonderful lives, and then it comes to this like violent sudden stop. Like, that's really unfair and horrifying.
Something that I think is, not necessarily interesting, but worth mentioning is the difference between the two. And that one was almost undiscovered to be a murder. That Bertha's death was initially ruled of natural causes, that there was such subtle, unnoticeable disturbances that, and this was the 90s, granted that was a while ago now, but still recent-ish, that there had been leaps and bounds in like forensics and detective work.
Yeah, Bertha's death initially going unnoticed and being written as natural causes, you know, signed off by a medical doctor that it was natural causes, is scary, because, you know, here we have two deaths, you know, that's a pattern. And so it makes you like really start to wonder, like, has this happened in other places, in other nursing homes? And it was just chalked up to old age or whatever ailments may be. Obviously, with Nancy's murder, it was much more obvious that she had come to a very violent end. But the subtlety of Bertha's is quite scary to think about when you think about it on a larger scale.
One of the first things that I wrote down, and this is dealing with Nancy's case, something that struck me as odd was that the screen was taken out.
Nancy's window had been cut. The nursing home had called because they found windows with screen popped out after the murders, but Nancy's window had been cut.
That detail was particularly horrifying to me, because I had the realization that it could have been popped out from the inside or cut out from the inside, which puts the perpetrator of the crime within the building. And you go into detail and cover that there was a possibility that it could have happened from the inside. And that my thought process was tracking with that. But that also adds another horrifying layer of how calculated this crime was, and that possibly the perpetrator knew these people or knew of them. My question for you was, do you think someone was able to get in and hid and waited?
I do think that it is possible that somebody could have came in and just kind of observed. But I also think that's something that they could have done from the outside as well, to kind of see when are they doing the rounds, kind of get the schedule, the lay of the land, and then make a move. Assuming that, and police do assume that both of these murders were perpetrated by the same person, it does seem like they were stalking the nursing home and figuring out which rooms they could get into, which windows were unlocked. You know, the nighttime routine of the hourly bed check. So it does seem like there was some stalking for sure. You know, and another detail I'm remembering now is that other residents at the nursing home said they saw a man like lurking around. So I think that could be the killer, but the staff there, you know, just kind of wrote it off because, you know, these are people who might have dementia or, you know, might be talking about things that aren't necessarily in the room with them. So they weren't sure they could believe them. But the residents kept saying, you know, there's a man. So Yeah, I think there was definitely watching, stalking, understanding what was happening here.
I'm obviously, as I'm sure with you and our listeners now, very interested in the parking lot man. Like, who was that? Were there exterior cameras? Was there a license plate? I mean, there is such a vivid description of him, but never figure out who that person is.
Yeah, as far as I know, nobody saw him, you know, get in or out of a car or, you know, make or model or anything like that. You know, they mentioned they saw a man in the nursing home parking lot. And then over the course of the next few days, a man is seen in the parking lot next door of the Missoula Athletic Club, which was just right next door to the nursing home. I do think that they're the same person. You know, it just kind of got clarified in the reporting. But it is a very detailed description. And yet, you know, there's no suspect sketch that I could find or that was ever circulated. It's not mentioned in any of the reporting. And it really is kind of, you know, that could be anybody. It describes a lot of people. It's frustrating to have a really clear description of somebody, but not no face, no identifying features, no make, model of car, nothing to else to tie to them to even narrow it down a little.
I think something that we can say is a certainty in this case, in these cases, is that it was planned. You know, law enforcement even said, like, the person who did this was cautious and calculated. It's just so ugly. It's just so ugly. It's unimaginable. My brain actively tries to force out how someone could plan to do this because I simply don't want to think about it.
Police definitely think this was planned, and I think that goes into, you know, how they were able to slip in and slip out without anybody seeing them is how planned it was. But police do seem to think that the victims themselves were more random. Like, it doesn't seem like these women were targeted for specific reasons, but more they were targeted because maybe that was the room where the man had the easiest access.
Something I'm grateful for, even though I think it's very sad when this has to happen, I am glad that Bertha's body was exhumed and that they had the thoughts at the time to take a second look. Because even though they mostly pulled her DNA profile, there was other DNA there, whether it's something that popped up in a system, which it seems like it didn't, there's still the possibility of evidence being there and a suspect profile coming from that in the future. I'm very glad that they did that and found out the details of what actually happened to her. Everything that they did was course corrected in those actions. And I'm just so happy that they have all of that information and evidence now. Even though it is not playing out and revealing anything to us in the moment, I am hopeful that it will reveal something in the future.
Yeah, in 1990, DNA evidence was really in its infancy. You know, when I was reading reports on this, they really go in and explain, like, what DNA is and, like, how it could be used to pinpoint somebody. Like, it was very much just kind of entering investigations. So they were able to pull DNA off of Bertha's body. And, you know, when they ran their initial DNA testing, they were only able to isolate her DNA. Unfortunately, from my understanding of DNA testing, once you test like a swab, for instance, it's destroyed after the testing. They can't go back and retest that same swab. So what I hope is in this case is that they still have some things that need to be tested with more sensitive and sophisticated equipment. We know they have Nancy's sheets and contact DNA that wasn't even a thing in 1990, and today it's something that we have. So all those, I really think that there's opportunity to retest some of the evidence in this case and possibly pull a DNA profile of the suspect. One thing I want to mention to our listeners, you know, I searched really hard to try to find pictures of Bertha and Nancy You know, going back through the newspaper archives, the obituaries, Google searches, internet searches, all of that. And I just couldn't find a printed or published photo of either woman. So unfortunately, we don't have pictures of these women to show you. But we will have a picture, like kind of an aerial view of Riverside Care Facility. So you can kind of see the layout and the river that runs right behind it. We'll also have some pictures that were in newspapers of just the investigation happening there. So that will be on our Instagram at Cold and Missing. You can find us there. And if you're not following us, please follow us there. We've had a lot of new followers recently, so thanks for joining us over there. But like I've mentioned before, and I'll say it again, if we ever have any updates, you know, if we have to postpone an episode because something unexpected pops up, it'll all be there. Also, thank you to everyone who has taken time to rate and review our podcast. It's so helpful in getting other people to find the podcast, listen to the podcast. So thank you for advocating for all of the stories that we cover here, because sharing, rating, reviewing, that all helps these stories get out there. And if you are looking for other episodes, maybe you're new here and you're sad, we're going to be taking the next week off and you're looking for some more episodes, you can go to coldandmissing.com and it has all of our back catalog on there as well as transcripts. So if you or someone you love is hard of hearing, you can follow along there. And again, if you know anything about the murder of Bertha Scott and Nancy Lagerquist in 1990, please call the Missoula County Sheriff's Office at 406-258-3302. But that is all I have for you this week. Thank you so much for listening to Cold and Missing. We'll be off next week. I'm your host, Allie.
And I'm your co-host, Eli.
Have a good couple of weeks and stay safe, y'all.
Stay safe, y'all.